Crude oil is crude. Natural gas is pure. That's why Pennzoil's base oil is made from natural gas, not crude. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30.
The heartbreaking news of the tragic passing of NBA legend Kobe Bryant, his daughter Gianna, along with seven others, reverberated around the world in a universal language of shock, disbelief, and sadness.
A brilliant and passionate player.
The future Hall of Famer.
Earned 18 NBA All-Star selections.
Two-time NBA Finals MVP.
Two Olympic gold medals.
And displayed a relentless approach to a game he dearly loved.
Please join us in a moment of silence in memory of Kobe Bryant, Gianna Bryant, and the other victims of today's tragedy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We are live from Los Angeles, California, a city that will forever be synonymous with Kobe Bryant, who, of course, died with his daughter Gianna and seven others in a helicopter on Sunday. Welcome to The Jump. We are coming to you from Staples Center. We are overlooking the plaza at LA Live, where so many have gathered since Sunday's tragic news. I'm Rachel Nichols. I'm here with Kendrick Perkins, Paul Pierce. We're going to have a bunch of guests coming through a two-hour show today as we celebrate a legend and remember all the things that so many loved about him. And I wanted to start with the two of you guys because you played him in two NBA Finals, and so of all the ways we will remember Kobe, we'll certainly remember the father, the teammate, the competitor, though. Was Kobe Bryant. So from two NBA Finals opponents, Paul, what do you remember about Kobe Bryant, the competitor?
Well, as the competitor, you know you want to win more than anybody. And I just remember when I had a chance to match up with him finally, because at first it was Ray guard him, then I asked to switch on him. Can I guard Kobe? Let me guard
Kobe. At a pivotal moment, he was giving you guys some trouble.
And I remember when I first got on it, I'm leaning on him, I'm breathing hard on him. I got that from Kevin Garnett. And he just shot me with an elbow right to my ribs, like, twice. And I was like, hold on. He's like, well, we shouldn't have came over. You're going to come over here. You're going to take this pain. And I was like, this guy right here, man, he just don't stop with the little tricks. And he just wanted to just kill me, like, straight up. He would, like, grab me, toss me, elbow me, and everything he could. And the most competitive player I ever played against, like, by far. I mean, it was just like a new challenge, like, oh, you want me to come over there now, Paul? You want some of this? And it was just like, wow, all right. I got to be ready to be embarrassed on national TV, but, you know, I'm up for it.
Now, I just remember a lot of things about Kobe, especially during those finals. I could finally tell P this. I was scared to death facing Kobe. I mean, because, you know, he was scary, man. You just didn't know what to expect. And I just remember one play, I was trapping a pick and roll, and he kind of got around the screen and shot a three. And I remember Coach Tibbs yelling at me like, Perk, keep him in front of you. So in the timeout, I was like, hey, Tibbs, you want to come out here and try to guard him? How about you come out here and try to do it? But he was the ultimate competitor. You know, Kobe, when you think about Kobe, it was another story when I was in Oklahoma City. And I remember we was playing him in the playoffs, and we was trying to trap him. And, you know, I'm trying to give my team some life and bring that tenacity. And he goes to the free throw line, and I'm like, hey, ain't none of that up in here today. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, we going to lock this up today. And he was like, man, hey, you know what, Perk? I got 30,000 reasons why you can't stop me today. So I was just,
oh, wow. Oh, the trash talk.
And there you go.
Kevin was good at trash talking? This guy, man.
Yeah.
Quiet as kept.
Well, you mentioned the elbow to the ribs.
Oh, goodness.
A year ago, Tracy McGrady and I sat down with Kobe Bryant to tell some old stories. And Tracy McGrady has an elbow story as well. Take a listen.
I remember you had Coach Wool down in Orlando, and I came out early to say hi to Ty Lue, I think it was, and, you know, they were telling me, oh, Max ready for you, Max ready for the game. And I remember reading about you having some tightness in your back. And yeah, and I said, yeah, how's his back? Oh, so he's ready for you. I said, he's going to be fine when I hit him in that
Listen,
so I'm going to check.
Yeah?
I'm going to check that back.
I had like 21 in the first half. I could have swore this dude, I think I came up, got a rebound, and when I went down, he jumped up behind me, and I swear I got an airball in my back. I
swear I got an elbow on my back. And I had a contusion. I was out. I had a contusion. I was like, yo, he did that. Because I was cooking in the first half, right? And I was like, damn.
He is competitive drinking a cup of coffee. Hey, listen, you know that's going
to
happen.
I just wanted to test the back out, see how healthy it is. But,
oh man, that's great.
That's
he just wanted to talk. He just wanted to check on Tracy there. He just wanted to check it.
Yeah, right.
But that was him, right? And you said that he would get any little advantage because to him that was all in the field to play.
He tried to find an edge any way he could. I mean, he was already had the edge ability wise, but mentally too, he always was trying to find the edge.
His influence on this next generation of players, frankly, on his generation of players, because I know that you guys who considered him not equals, but in his generational realm, were also taking notes from him, but the next generation too, Perk, coming after him. How did players look at Kobe? And as you said, when you're a young player trying to go against this legend, how did you try to model yourself on him?
Well, you know, like, I'm a little younger than P, so, you know, P was looking up to basically like Magic and Jordan and those guys. Well, I was a guy that was looking up to Kobe. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was in high school, it was that Kobe and Shaq duo going on. So, you know, when you look at all the guys, and I'm watching today's NBA, you watch these guys, and it's sad to say, but since the tragedy and the death of Kobe, to me, the NBA has went to another level of guys competing and playing hard. You have, you know, Trae Young, who has already been balling, but you look at the game he had last night, he put on the show. You look at Bradley Beal, all these guys are, to me, looking like they're going out there and laying it all out on the line. Just, you know,
as
playing hard. Yeah, as to Kobe, and you love to see it.
The one thing I see that how he's influenced this generation, and I'm going to go brand-wise,
okay.
and I'll never forget this. When Kobe came out with that shoe, the low-top shoe,
mm-hmm.
nobody was wearing low-tops
at
the time.
Right.
You know, we was wearing quarter-tops. Then it was like now you had Harden,
mm-hmm.
you had KD. These guys had their signature shoe. What were they? They were low tops.
Of course.
And nobody, that was his influence on this generation as far as branding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you started to see it around the league. Now everybody around the league started wearing low tops. And it was like, that's all because of Kobe.
It's the lineage, too, when you look at his on-court game. Look, especially at the beginning of his career, everything Kobe did was a mimic of Michael Jordan. And I say that as a compliment because everyone wanted to be like Mike, and nobody got close the way Kobe did.
Yes.
Kobe was the one who managed to capture his essence, the style of his game, the rhythm of the way he moved up and down the court, mm-hmm. even some of his speech mannerisms. He sort of mimicked and echoed Kobe. And then Michael Jordan, of course, to a lot of players who are younger in the NBA today, like Trae Young or Luka Doncic, Michael Jordan's an old highlight to them. They weren't even alive when Michael Jordan was
playing. All the way down
playing.
To the frame of Jordan,
right.
The ball head,
right.
All
charisma,
the walk,
like the walk,
right. the so shirt those, being tucked in.
Those, right.
This
so
right here.
This, that, right? So those young players are picking all of that up from Kobe.
Yeah.
And Kobe got that DNA passed down from Jordan. So the way Kobe was a conduit for what many people consider the greatest player ever. And that's yet another thing he did, was carry on Michael Jordan's legacy in a way, again, nobody else was able to do. No one else could be like Mike the way Kobe could be like Mike. And then add, of course, all of his own layer onto that was incredible.
Incredible.
But you know what's crazy is that, and it's no disrespect to Mike, because, you know, Mike is up there as one of the all-time greats, but Kobe mimicked Mike, but he took his skill set to another level.
Yes.
You know, Kobe is, to me, was more skilled than Mike. Not in no disrespectful manner, but I'm talking about when you looked at all the things that Kobe mastered in his game, this guy would literally shoot left-hand shots in the game, like, and was serious about it.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't even playing. You know, he was serious about it. So, to me, you know, when you look, when I think of Kobe, I think of as probably the most skilled guy to ever play the game.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, he's up there. He's up there. I mean, there's nothing he really couldn't do.
Because
and
right.
then as he got older, you know, he just like Mike, you know, he started going to the post more.
Right. Sure.
You know, the footwork.
Well, he learned how to adapt in a way that was so impressive, obviously. And then again, even after the Achilles injury, you saw him able to adapt in that way. Man,
absolutely.
I'm not getting into a Kobe versus Mike discussion.
Not today.
You are not trapping
not
me into that. That is not going to happen.
No.
All right, coming up, we are going to remember Kobe Bryant with some of his teammates, the guy who played with him. We're going to be giving you Mamba moments throughout the show as well. These are going to be some of our favorite Kobe highlights. And here is his first one, his first All-Star game in 1998.
Here comes Bryant ahead of the field. Reverse.
Oh.
Ooh. And that was a boom and a clap.
That's the
vibe. That's what I'm talking about. In an All-Star game, you want to do things that
Madison
you normally
Square Garden,
do.
Baby.
But Shaq knows how important it
is. Man, nobody talked about his athleticism like that, too.
Right? Shutting him up. Young Kobe, come on. He has NBA DNA.
What's that, the helicopter?
Kobe had pounds.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Oh, goodness.
That's sick.
This season on The Neighborhood.
Hey, how about I mow your lawn? You touch my lawn, and I'll defrost your car every morning. You copy my outfit? You copy my outfit?
I can help with that.
Is there something going on with the neighbor?
Oops.
College Game Day on ESPN, covered by State Farm.
He was someone who inspired millions of fans.
We lost one of our greats, and I don't just mean that by what he did on the court, but just the way he lived his life.
He was going on this journey with his daughter, and I think we could all feel that it was going somewhere special.
Just to watch her play was like watching a young Kobe.
He had the mentality that he was the best or is going to be the best.
We still are the best duo ever created.
He will live forever in this city, and I am happy to have shared a small part of his life.
We are back here at Staples Center remembering Kobe Bryant. Now joining us, Brian Shaw, who won three titles with Kobe. Matt Barnes, rival turned friend of Kobe, played with him for 2 years. Before we get into a discussion with these two, a little breaking news for you. Mark Spears of The Undefeated reporting that in the All-Star game, Team LeBron is going to wear the number 2 for Gianna, all the players.
Wow.
And that Team Giannis will wear the number 24, of course, for Kobe Bryant. So a lot of us have been hoping that those numbers would get some play in the All-Star game, and they're going to be there on Sunday. That is very, very special. Brian, look, people think that you became teammates with Kobe and got to know him around 1999. That's not true. When did you first meet Kobe Bryant?
I first met him in 1989 playing in Italy against his father.
Wow.
And, you know, he was a 10, 11-year-old kid running around on the court, getting in everybody's way, challenging everybody to play one-on-one and play horse. And so that's how far back it goes.
I'm shocked to hear that he was getting into everything. I can't believe that. And he obviously trying to emulate all of you guys. I remember hearing stories about that. But when he was in high school, even you had a conversation with him where he forecast his NBA future.
Yeah, we went to the finals in 94-95 season with Orlando. He was a big fan of Penny Hardaway, and Jelly Bean brought him to one of the games, and he was a junior in high school, and he said, next year I'm going to be playing against you. And I was like, you know, he had grown to be my height.
Yeah.
But I hadn't seen him in a while. He was a skinny kid.
But this was when he was a junior, by the way, not even a senior.
And on top of that, he said, you know, I even thought about foregoing my senior year of high school, which has never been done.
Come get you, huh?
Yeah, so.
And at the time, you're like, yeah, whatever, kid.
Yep. And then, you know, next year I saw the press conference where he, you know, said he was foregoing college and going to enter an NBA draft. And I was like, wow, he told me that a year ago, right, that he was going to be doing that. And now he is.
I love the story of you and how you and Kobe became close and you became teammates with him, because what everyone really associates you with Kobe is that flinch moment, right? When you were rivals and the trash you talked against each other.
People are still mad at me about that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm seeing it on social media, like, you know, so-and-so F you, he didn't flinch. I'm just like, and if you would just listen to the whole situation, understand. But it, like I said, we were just super competitive. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It was, you know, we had mutual respect for each other. But then, like I said, after that situation went down, you know, I was talking to Miami Heat and Pat Riley about joining LeBron, D-Wade, and them. And then Kobe hits me. You know what I mean? So it's like, man, do I go to Miami with this super team, or do I come home and play with Kobe and play with my favorite team? And that's when I came home, and, you know, we became brothers from there.
You guys were very close when you guys played together. Can you explain, to be a teammate of Kobe Bryant and hear all the time, in practice, in text messages, anything else, just that competitiveness always, even about situations, it shouldn't be like that, right?
Well, I think we saw two completely different Kobes. You know, he got him at the very beginning, sure. You know, and I got him after, you know, he had been seasoned a little bit, so.
Yeah, I had number 8, you had number 24.
All right, well, let's start with 8, because he was the warrior.
Well, yeah. 8 was raw, but the one thing that was consistent about him was his preparation. Mm-hmm. And especially when he knew that he was going to be playing against the guys who were supposed to be, you know, his competition as the best players in the league, whether it be LeBron, D-Wade, Melo, whoever at that time, he would come to the film room and say, I want every touch from each one of these guys, and I'm getting ready to play 2 weeks before we would play them.
Really?
To prepare for them and everything that he would need to that he would need to do. And so to me, that's what stuck with me, his preparation, his discipline to, you know, to his craft. And when it came down, he was a consummate pro in every aspect of it. And so you hear people talk about his demeanor on the court, his competitiveness, but it started with the preparation. And he believed that if you prepare over and over and give yourself a lot of repetitions, there's never a situation that's too big for you because you've prepared for it and you've done it so many times already.
One thing that always struck me about him in covering him was that he really didn't believe in giving anyone mercy.
No.
Especially, if, you know, you would think most guys, he's a younger kid or I'm on his team or any of that. And to him, not doing that was about, hey, you got to raise your standards. I'm not going to give you a pass here.
Yeah, no, we had a situation out in Santa Barbara at his basketball camp where I'm coming back off I tore my meniscus with them the first year. We're coming back the second year after Phil left. And I'm out there. He's like, all right, we got to play 2-on-2. I'm like, well, I'm all right. I'm not really knowing what I'm getting into. And we're going out there, and he is backing down kids, blocking shots, dunking on them, blocking their shots. And I'm kind of just sitting back, kind of watching, like, this is playoff mode Kobe, right? And these kids are little, like, falling down, didn't care, mercy.
I was there, too. Okay. There was a kid that they called the White Mamba.
Yeah.
You challenged him.
Oh, that was a mistake. Yeah. That was a mistake.
Yeah. And I said, you good? He's like, man, get them like this. No, he said a few explicit, but like, basically he's saying nothing easy here. I don't care how old you are.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you tell the shark story, please?
Yeah, so we had training camp in Santa Barbara, and everybody knows I love to fish.
Yes.
So he said he wanted to come fishing with me. I called him about 6 o'clock in the morning. I went down to the beach. He didn't end up coming.
Okay.
So I caught some sharks and some stingrays right from the bank. And I took pictures of them, and then I texted them to him, and I said, look, see what you missed this morning? And he texted back and said, what did you do with them? And I said, I just took a picture with them, and I threw them back in the water. And he said to me, why did you do that? And I said, well, what was I supposed to do? He said, you were supposed to kill them. They got caught. That's their fault, you know, so you're supposed to kill them. But that was his mentality. It didn't matter.
They priced those sharks pay.
Right.
That's right.
Kill or be killed.
You took the wrong bait. You got caught. Now you got to pay the price.
And Matt, you saw him, as you said, more toward the second half and in some unguarded moments as he was dealing with things in his life and dealing with, you know, look, he was the most dominant player in the league for a while and then having to phase out and get older like the rest of us do. How did you see him handle that as a teammate?
Well, you know what I mean? Because obviously it's all mental for him. His mental toughness is second to none, you know. So we were both going through a lot of personal stuff, and he actually got a little condo at the top of the Ritz right across the street. And we used to take these tunnels underneath and go right up to the his room, hang out, you know, drink, have a couple drinks, and then decide we're going to go dinner or what we're going to do that night. And it was just really, like you said, unfiltered, vulnerable time for both of us. And that's when we leaned on each other. You know, we talked about life. We talked about our relationships. We talked about kids. We talked about life after. You know, he was just a regular dude when you got a chance to get him to open up.
Yeah. And look, the thing about Kobe is he always was curious. He always wanted to learn more. And that's something I think we don't talk about enough. When someone thinks they're as good as Kobe Bryant thought he was, a lot of those kinds of people, they don't want to hear anything from anyone else, right? They don't think they can learn anything more. The way I do it is the good way to do it. But he was always asking questions and always introspective, and especially in transition moments of his life.
I just think, you know, obviously later on, you know what I mean? Because you hear so many different things about it, the younger Kobe. You know, like I said, I didn't get a chance to know. I was a fan of that player. I got a chance to know the older guy. And along the way, it's what's best for everybody.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It wasn't so much about him anymore. Although he was still the focal point, it's about what's best and what is it going to take to bring these guys together to get me another championship.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you both. Matt, we'll see you a little bit later in the show. Brian, thank you so much for being with us, sharing those memories. I'm picturing 10-year-old Kobe running around you guys. That is really, really amazing. Coming up, we are going to place Kobe historically among the all-time greats. And here is our next Mamba moment. We're going to be doing these all show. This highlight is from when Kobe took over Game 4 of the 2000 Finals. Take a listen.
Shaking on Miller and hitting a two-point basket. He was just inside the line. Shaw running one-hander, followed in by Kobe Bryant.
Again, offensive rebounds.
Going down the stretch, Shaq goes down. All of a sudden, you step up. These are the kind of moments that you look for, aren't they?
Yeah, when Shaq fouled out, my mind state was, you know, this game just became awful. Awful lot more interesting than it was. And it was just fun for me. You know, I laughed about it. Just went out and played relaxed as if I was in a backyard.
First time I ever got dunked on, and it had to be Kobe Bryant.
Kobe Bryant, sensational! Kobe Bryant just took the gravity out of the Target Center.
Oh my goodness, that was sweet. That's as good as it gets, folks.
We are back here with you from downtown Los Angeles. We are at Staples Center overlooking the plaza at LA Live, where so many continue to gather and mourn in the wake of Sunday's tragic news. I got a little bit more news for you guys on the All-Star Game. I'm back here with Paul Pierce, Kendrick Perkins. I mentioned in the last segment that one of the teams, Team LeBron, is going to wear number 2 on all their jerseys to honor Gianna in the All-Star Game. Team Giannis is going to wear number 24 to honor Kobe Bryant. And throughout the entire All-Star weekend, the NBA has said that every player is going to wear jersey patches with 9 stars to represent the 9 victims of Sunday's crash. Wow, so I think that's particularly
beautiful.
Nice.
That's beautiful.
As well. I want to talk to you guys about where Kobe stands in basketball history. And look, you know, we have these debates in bars and barbershops all the time.
Right.
But where would you place him, Paul, in basketball history?
Definitely a top 10 player. I mean, I think he's right behind Michael Jordan as far as two guards. Because when you look at the longevity, the accolades, the championships, I mean, he's right there. So, definitely a top 10. I don't know where at, but second definitely to Michael Jordan as far as position-wise, shooting guard. But I have him in my top 10 of all-time players.
Well, P, I'm going to disagree with you on this one for the simple fact I'm younger than you. So he's actually in my top 5.
Okay.
And when I say my top 5, I'm going in this in no particular order, but I'm going Jordan, Magic, Braun, Kobe, and Bird. That's my top 5 all time.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar not making your top 5.
I wasn't born.
He's not a historian like me.
Yeah,
he doesn't know about Rachel, Bill Russell.
Rachel, I wasn't around like Kareem, that. You know what I'm saying? I'm going on what I saw.
He's going on what he saw.
Yeah, I'm not going on story. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, just to take it further, Rachel, I think even past the basketball world, and I said this yesterday, you know, with the passing of Kobe, to me, it's like, this is the his death is more impactful on the world than what Michael Jackson was, you know, when he passed. And I think, like, when you look at this, it's crazy because I was saying this, it feel like it's a different energy in the world. Mm-hmm. And to me, you know, the passing of Kobe Bryant is immortalized, and I think he's in a league of his own.
Look, it is hard to place guys, especially with different eras, right? I mean, you know, because you have youngins.
Yeah, we could debate all. We could debate all that.
Yeah, we could debate this all day.
You know what that underscores to me in all seriousness? And that is, and we're doing it a lot this week. We will continue to do it in the All-Star Game, and we'll do it this fall when, of course, Kobe is scheduled to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. But this means that we have the responsibility, all of us who sat and watched Kobe Bryant play, that 20 years from now, when there's a youngin who's sitting at a desk like this doesn't say, I didn't see Kobe Bryant.
Exactly.
But it's just, but listen, it's just, right. it's just like this. Take this for example. I was having an argument with one of my uncles, and he was my one of my great uncles, and he was like, man, I'm telling you, man, Wilt Chamberlain. And I was like, man, are you serious? Wilt Chamberlain was playing against guys like Skip Bayless and Max Kellerman, man. Like, come on, man, the generation is different. The generation, do you know what Kobe would have did back then? Kobe would have killed them.
Oh, my goodness. That's good.
Kobe Bryant, again, we flash those accolades up here. But fourth all-time in scoring. Of course, LeBron just passed him this weekend. 18-time All-Star. Only Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Here we go.
11 times first-team All-NBA. It's just, it's amazing. I could make a list. It could be the whole rest of this two-hour show. The Shaq and Kobe era, though, of all the eras. And it's funny. We saw the dunks at the beginning of the segment. People always think, when they think Shaq and Kobe, they're like, oh, Kobe was the guard out there, and Shaq was right by the basket dunk. And then patrolling there in the paint. But Kobe got in the paint too, thank you very much.
Yes.
What was it like to play against Shaq and Kobe?
This was a nightmare. Let me tell you. Because most of the times I would be the weak side defense playing Kobe. Then you throw it over to Shaq, you come double Shaq, but now I'm leaving Kobe open. And it's like, okay, now Kobe's driving and you help on Kobe. Now he's giving it to Shaq. It was just like a defensive nightmare. And it was just like when LA was on the schedule, I was like, man, you know what? I'm going to try to get 30. We're going to lose.
Right.
And then you might leave with a couple elbows and bruises from Shaq. You might get highlight dunked on by Kobe. You know, let's just hurry up and get out in and out of LA as fast as possible. I did not like playing against this duo.
What made them work so well together on the court?
You know what? I'm scared to say the wrong thing because I'm up in this younger generation. And, you know, Kobe and Shaq to me is one of the best duos of all time. I mean, you look at it, both of these guys dominated. Like,
yeah,
this
wasn't the most dominant
right,
duo.
Right,
most
for sure. And this wasn't just picking roles. Like, this was post-ups. This was at every aspect of the game. And then, you know, what a lot of people don't credit Kobe and Shaq for is that on the defensive end, what they did defensively, especially in the playoffs in the crunch time. I can remember when Shaq was getting 5 or 6 block shots. Nobody talk about that. Everybody want to talk about the 35 and 15 that he was putting up. But he was getting them 4 or 5 blocks, and Kobe was going to get him 2 blocks, 6 steals at crunch time. But I rank them high. They up there, like I said, I'm the younger generation. Hey, Rachel, look, I don't want no problems with you or P.
I agree with you on that.
All right, cool. As long as you agree with me on that, I'm cool.
Your point about defense is good because Kobe did not come from a generation where we talked about two-way players. To him, you played in NBA basketball. You were a two-way player. It's not under this one loafing on one end of the court. Being a great meant playing both ways.
Yeah, you know one thing that sticks out to my mind? He was so competitive that he challenged Shaq to get better.
Yes.
It's like, wait a minute. Shaq has dominated Kobe. When you heard about the feud, he challenged Shaq. Like, you need to be better for us. And I'm looking up like, how much better can Shaq get? That's right. How competitive and how bad he wanted greatness for just not only himself, but everybody around.
Let me tell you how great it was, right? And I'm not saying this because Pete, my brother, and we went to war together, but him and Kobe wanted to kill each other every time they got on the court. Especially when it was during those Lakers and Celtic time. And to reflect back from what we talked about earlier on the show, I remember when P was like, you know, Kobe was doing this thing and P came in the shoot around, was like, man, I got him. And me and KG looking at P like, P, slow down, man. We need you to give us this 35, man. Hey. We don't need you wasting energy. He like, nah, I got him. You know what? He just going to have to bust my head to the white meat. I don't even care.
I did say that.
Should I even ask what happened in that game?
Oh, man. No, I'll tell you another story. All-Star game. I think it was 2009 we beat him. So I'm yelling at Kobe. I'm on the bench. Like, he going to choke at the line. He going to choke. I'm standing up. And he shoots the free throw. And I remember, like, after the free throw, he walks over to the bench, and I thought we were going to fight. He was pissed off that I was yelling from the sideline. I was like, you going to choke like you did in the finals. You know, I'm yelling this.
Paul Pierce.
Like, no, I'm just talking. You know, I'm talking smack. Right. I talk smack.
That's,
you know,
what
this
Pete
is the all. I thought we were going to fight in the All-Star game. He was so pissed off.
It's an All-Star game.
I know. Right. I know. It was bad. It was bad.
Look, Rachel, one more, too. I got to tell you this. So, I'm in Oklahoma City, right?
Yeah.
And we playing the Lakers in the playoffs. So, I'm like, I'm trying to, you know, give my team some tenacity. I'm, you know, showing
sure.
them, like, hey, man, we're not about to get infatuated with Kobe Bryant. And we go out. So the first play, I hard foul him. He go to the free throw line. I'm like, hey, man, yeah, we stopping this. We locking this up today. Ain't nothing easy. He get to the free throw line. Before he shoot his first free throw, he like, say, Perk, I got 30,000 reasons why y'all not about to stop me today. He used to hit me with them classics, man, below the belts, but I had to take them.
As we're talking about Kobe and Shaq, I just want to say what Shaquille O'Neal did on Tuesday night. Ooh, if you guys saw what he did on TNT, it was so beautiful and heartfelt. I was very grateful having covered them together, having covered them when they broke apart, some of the, frankly, terrible things that they said about each other for years, that they were able to come together toward the end of Kobe's playing career. They had a great moment on TV together. On TNT, did a public interview with the two of them, but then they also had a great private moment. I remember being at Kobe's last game, and before the game, and Shaq was there, and Kobe came in through a private room, and the two of them, I remember just seeing the two of them talking. Was just, it was really special to see that. And then during Kobe's last game, Shaq is the one who challenged him and said, you got to go out and get 50. You got to go out and get 50. It's your last game.
Right.
And then, of course, as Shaq famously said after, he goes, I challenged him to get 50, and then the mother, whatever, went out and got 60 instead.
That's it right there.
And Shaq, of course, also very poignantly talking on TNT the other night about how he wishes that they had talked a little more in recent years, Kobe being so sweet to Shaq's son.
Right.
And just a good reminder that even when things are feuding and things seem very difficult, it is worth holding on to all of those relationships. And Kobe's death, so tragic, but if it can teach some of us some things as we go forward, at least we can give that some meaning. So that is my Kobe Shaq feeling, is watching them at the end.
Yeah.
Brothers.
It's beautiful.
Brothers,
sure.
Like they were at the beginning. All right. We're going to take a quick break here. We're going to remember Kobe is a youth sports coach, because that was what he was doing in the last year or two, sharing the love of the game with not only Gigi, but so many of her teammates and youngsters around the Los Angeles area. And here's our next Mamba moment. This is from 2003.
This was
sick.
Look at this.
And then 360 on the ground.
Yeah, come on.
That's all instinct, too.
That's all instinct.
All instinct. Beautiful.
Look at him after.
For parents, it's about truly understanding the connection between life and sport. You know, you got to let kids be kids. Let them have fun. Help them find their own way. When those answers become things that they find on their own, it's something that they own versus us telling them what they should be doing or telling them what they should be feeling. Just go out and have fun with them, right? Just be imaginative. You know, give her the ball and say, listen, you got 10 seconds left. I'll count down from 10, you know, hit a game-winning shot. Things like that. Sport is the greatest metaphor that we have for life, and it's important that we treat it as such.
Welcome back to The Jump. We are live at Staples Center, downtown Los Angeles, and tonight will be the Lakers' first game since the tragic death of Kobe Bryant. So many people just wanting to be here today. One of them, 2019 WNBA Rookie of the Year, Nafisa Collier. Thank you so much for joining us. We've got Ramona Shelburne with us, Matt Barnes back with us. And you worked out at the Mamba Sports Academy. You worked with Kobe and Gigi Bryant, and you went to UConn. Gianna had her heart set on going to UConn. What was it like to be around them together?
It was amazing. The first time I met them was at the Final Four at UConn. And, I mean, Gigi would talk about it all the time. I mean, after we lost my junior year, Kobe was telling us that she was, like, crying in the car, super upset. She's like, I can't believe that happened again. When I get to UConn, I'm never allowing that to happen. So, she was super competitive, just like him, and it was just a joy to be around them.
And their relationship with each other, you know, look, Ramona, you and I saw them together
all
quite
the time.
A bit, especially around here in Los Angeles. What did you notice about him and his parent?
Well, look, he got to the office early every day. He would get there, you know, 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, and he would work till 2 p.m. And then at 2 p.m., he left because he needed to go pick up his kids from school. And he didn't like waiting in the line, right? the carpool line.
Kobe Bryant is competitive.
He had to be first.
That's right. He had to be first.
In the carpool line.
That's right. So he would get to the school, and he would be first in line to pick up his kids every day. And then he'd drop them back off at home, and he'd go back to the office and put in a couple more hours of work. And, you know, I thought about that the other day just because, you know, he missed a lot of that when he was playing. He was so maniacal about his training. And Gigi really started coming along with him on a lot of things. Like, they were like two peas in a pod, yeah. Right? Lakers trainer Gary Vee the other day just posted a video where he was texting with Kobe, and he sent him a video of Kobe, and he goes, "See this move? You recognize this move anywhere?" And it was a turnaround, just like that famous Kobe turnaround. Like,
amazing.
You could just tell it was like in her blood. Like, she just had that muscle memory.
And Matt, your kids play AAU. Obviously Gianna and her teammates on AAU.
We would see each other like every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We would see each other out in Orange County playing tournaments, and he just always made it a point to come and see my boys play. You know, he, as much security had to be around him and all this kind of stuff, he would come, and we even feels for 2 minutes and just peek on the boys. Sometimes he would stay longer, but it's the little things he did that were so special. But to touch on Jeezy, I mean, she was very like, I would, you know, after our games, we would go watch their games, and she really had that fire. She really had his competitive edge, and she was a killer. You know what I mean? So it was cool just to see him as now a fan of her, mm-hmm. and supporting her and what she's doing.
I mean, look, there's so many things that are tragic about this situation, but the mm-hmm. young girls on that helicopter are the thing for me that are just, it's so hard to even get past in your grief because of what their whole lives could have been like. In the case of Gianna, I heard someone say the other day, she could have grown up to be the greatest women's basketball player ever. She certainly had the bloodlines. She has been elite trained from 3 years old and had the competitive will. We've seen the tributes from UConn. We've seen Sabrina Ionescu having tributes for Gianna and for Kobe. What Kobe did with his emphasis for his daughters on women's basketball, women's sports overall, what did that mean to the WNBA community?
It meant so much. Just having someone like Kobe Bryant, one of the best to ever play, and you see him openly supporting the women's game, not just supporting, but you see like Sabrina there, just the relationships that he had were so personal. It wasn't just for show. It was it was real for him, and just having that support, I mean, it was invaluable for us, and it meant so much to us in the women's program and just for the women's game.
I mean, the women's game has so much value on its own. Yeah. It always drives me a little crazy when people want to compare it to the men's game or say it has value because, well, Kobe liked it, so it's good. It's good on its own. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. But there is something about someone that everyone admires, and whether it's a movie he recommends or a basketball game he likes, there are people who want to say, well, I want to check this out if Kobe checks it out, right?
Yeah, it's not the value. It's just kind of bringing exposure because we know that we're good. We know that what we bring to the table, but just the exposure that he brings with him and having him openly support us, it was just like, it was amazing.
Of all the times you worked out with Gigi and around them, what is going to be your memory of Gianna Bryant as you go forward?
Actually, the last time I worked out with them was right before Christmas in New York. And we were playing one-on-one, and she's 13, and, you know, she was just going at me as hard as she could, not backing down at all.
That sounds like him at the Sixers practice,
right?
Yeah,
exactly, right?
And she was getting mad at herself that she was losing. I'm like,
that sounds about right.
I'm a professional athlete. I'm taller than you.
But you know what's amazing? When Kobe was retiring, I did this long interview, and I said, hey, are we going to see you around? Are you going to be back at Staples Center? Are you going to be sitting courtside? And he goes, no, man, I don't need to come back to L.A. Mm-hmm. I have everything I need down in Orange County. Maybe here and there, but nah. You know why he came back? Because Gianna wanted to go to Sparks games.
Right.
Yep. Okay. And like, he didn't just show up at games. He was deeply involved in that. Mm-hmm. He would watch the women's college tournament every single year. I know he developed relationships with like the best college players, the best WNBA players. Candace Parker developed a relationship over with him. He called her before she played in the WNBA championship and gave her words of advice. I mean, this was not just like Twitter support.
Right.
This was real support.
And Gigi's the one who brought him really back to the NBA as well. Yep. She had favorite players. We've heard Trae Young talk about that. Went to take her to go see Luka Doncic. She is the one that made him want to go and be a fixture in the NBA world again. Yep. Peace, thank you so much for being with us. Yeah. We really appreciate it. We're going to talk a little bit in the next segment about how the NBA should honor Kobe's legacy, so stick around for that. I also want to get to our next Mamba moment. We're showing a highlight from Kobe Bryant with every segment we do on the show. This one is from 2004, the final day of the regular season.
Started by Patterson, staying outside the arc, dribbling. Patterson keeps his feet. Kobe forces it. Oh! He made it! Remaining in the regular season, possibly. Out to Kobe. Fall away high. Up to...
Again.
What a way to finish! Are you kidding me?
Are you... That's the way to end the regular season, Steph. That's the way you end it.
Well, you know, the plan was to give me the ball at the top of the key. You know, the timeout, I told my teammates, I said, give me a good pick, and we're going home with a W.
You really felt like you were going to win this game.
I told them, give me a good pick, and we're going home with a W.
want to be remembered? What matters to you in this whole discussion of what do you want people to think of?
I've always said that I wanted to be remembered as a player that didn't waste a moment. Welcome to the Kobe Show, take two. Didn't waste a day.
Kobe, Kobe, Kobe.
And I felt extremely blessed by the God-given talent. But at the same time, I didn't take it for granted at all. So if I could be remembered as a person that was born with a lot of talent, but did everything he could to try to overachieve, and lived every day as if he was the 12th guy on the bench, you know, I think that's a very powerful message to have, and something that hopefully the players that are now and players that'll come later choose to embody as well.
Welcome back to The Jump. We are just hours away from the Lakers taking the court for the first time since the tragic passing of Kobe Bryant. And you see LA Live still just packed. They have to keep moving the flowers and the posters and the signs and the balloons over so people can walk through, guys. It's just amazing. Matt Barnes still with us. I want to welcome back in Coach David Fizdale. And now sitting beside me, the Hall of Fame photographer, Andrew Bernstein.
The man.
You cataloged every moment Kobe had from the moment of his rookie year to his retiring and then well beyond. When Kobe put out a book at the end of his career called Mamba Mentality, How I Play, it's Andrew who he wanted to provide all the photographs for it. So I just want to ask you to start. What sticks out most from you? And I know that's like asking a crazy question, but in all of that time, what sticks out from you of his career?
Well, he just said it in the lead-in that he just never gave up. You know, he was always striving to be better, from that young rookie that I saw at 18 to the first championship, second, third, then took the team on his back. And, you know, that's one of the pillars of the Mamba mentality, is just relentlessness and always wanting to be the greatest you can possibly be and beyond that.
How hard was he to capture in a photograph because of all of the things he was doing out there?
Well, he was challenging, to be sure. And there were other guys, too, that came before him that were challenging, like Michael and Magic.
Sure.
But that's what makes it fun for me as a photographer. And to have a subject like that in front of my lens for 20 years, you know, I don't even know how many games that is, but hundreds and hundreds of thousands of images. To come away with this body of work, to me, it's just so satisfying. And, you know, the fact we were able to put it in a book and he was able to tell his story about what made him tick through my photos is an unbelievable gift.
It is an incredible book. I could highly, highly recommend it. It's funny. I always say about people like you and me who are journalists, getting a front row seat to anyone's life for 20 years is really cool. It doesn't have to be a famous athlete, right? If there is someone who you cataloged and for 20 years and watching them grow from a teenager to a man, having a family, if you got a front row seat to that with any human being, that would be a special experience. Right. But then when, you know, for me, I've known LeBron since he was a high school senior. When you saw Kobe come onto the scene, when it's one of those kinds of people, it's so incredible. And you are sort of telling the story through photographs of Kobe. Is there iconic Kobe photographs to you that stand out, or those little memories?
I mean, I don't think we've thanked Andrew enough. I mean, just to understand that, you know, you're capturing lifetime memories. Before he came on camera, he was telling me, you know, I have so many photos of your boys with Kobe and how much he was around. So it's just little things like that. In the moment as players, we're not thinking about that. But now, in post-career, when you retire, you want to just, like, look back and, you know, like you said, his stories tell, you know, a lifetime of his pictures tell a lifetime of stories.
And what about the family? He let you around some very special private moments with them, too.
For sure, for sure. I was there when he first introduced Vanessa to the whole team. We were in the locker room in 2000 and the champagne's flying around and he brought her in. Hey, this is Vanessa, you know, my fiance.
By the way.
And then she got doused with champagne like everybody else. And but then through the birth of all the kids and all the private stuff, man, it was just a great run.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you know, Fizz, you don't just let anybody into those moments.
No, not at all. These guys they're bombarded with people always trying to get in, and for different reasons, sometimes not good reasons. And so when you are allowed to be a part of these special players' lives, you know, you don't take that for granted.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Andrew, so much for stopping by. I know you will be there tonight to document that, like you have every other important moment in Kobe's life and his legacy afterward. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
it
Andrew.
It is so hard for any of us standing up here to put into words what Kobe meant. So we got to turn to someone who knows about storytelling. Michael B. Jordan composed a piece about what Kobe meant to him and to the rest of the world. Take a listen here.
The most important thing in life is how your career moves and touches those around you and how it carries forward to the next generation. That's what makes true greatness.
It's one of those numbers that can't be counted. The number of tears shed since we've heard.
Breaking news, five-time NBA champion Kobe Bryant died earlier this afternoon in a helicopter crash.
Today is one of the saddest days in my lifetime.
I don't even know if I can do this.
It's hard, but
please join us in a moment of silence for Kobe Bryant. Rest in peace, Mamba.
But amid all the pain and all the sorrow, there is a question worth pondering. Why all the tears? The answer may be as complex as the man himself.
My name is Kobe Bryant, 17 years old, with the hunger, the motivation, and the desire to be the best possible basketball player that I can be.
See, we're all crying because of a wonderful idea shared with Kobe Bryant. That a game matters.
Kobe Bryant has hit a shot at the buzzer! Whoa!
That what a person can do with a ball in their hands can make an impression far beyond the court that they play on. Seizing control of your heart, electrifying your imagination.
The Lakers repeat back-to-back titles!
Connecting us to millions who believe in that same magic.
One of the great farewell performances in any sport. 60 points.
There's beauty in that idea. Honor in that mission. And at its heart, there's love. We're crying because we got Kobe Bryant.
If I could be remembered as a person that was born with a lot of talent, but did everything he could to try to overachieve. You know, and lived every day as if he was the 12th guy on the bench. You know, I think that's a very powerful message to have.
We got that to him. Every day can be a chance to lift yourself just a little bit higher. Make yourself just a little bit better. That was the Mamba mentality.
I can't believe it's come to an end. You guys will always be in my heart. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. I love you guys.
It's been a long day without you, my friend. And I'll tell you all about it when I see you again.
You're crying because you're a father, or a daughter, or a son, or a mother.
To my family, my wife Vanessa, our daughters Natalia and Gianna, you know, thank you guys for all your sacrifice.
Whoever you are, old or young, you have people in your life that you love and you'll do anything for. We saw that reflected in the glimpses of his life. Glimpses of Kobe Bryant as a dad.
It's such a long journey. So many sacrifices for my family and me working hard.
Glimpses of Gigi Bryant as the future.
Fans will come up to me and she'll be standing next to me and they'll be like, hey, you gotta have a boy. You and V gotta have a boy, man. You have somebody carry on the tradition, the legacy. She's like, oh, I got this.
I let the light guide your way. Yeah. Hold every memory as you go.
We're never going to forget the sadness, the darkness, the emptiness. You know, all the things that we come to sports to get away from. But that's all right. Because even when the world doesn't feel like it makes much sense, we can still do what Kobe did. Find something or someone that you love and give yourself over to them completely. That will always be the essence of the ball player, the icon, the legend, and the human being. And through all the tears, it'll always be a beautiful thing.
For the final time, number 24 on the floor, five-time world champion, Kobe Bryant.
This one, this mural, this gets me every time.
Me too.
I can't tell you, if you don't live in Los Angeles, let us be up here.
Yep.
To explain that you cannot walk around this city anywhere. And LA is a big place, guys.
Yeah.
It's spread out. There is really no corner of Los Angeles that does not have some sort of tribute and memorial going to Kobe Bryant, the one of him and Gigi, of course.
Yeah.
It is actually heartbreaking. And I wanted to ask guys about, look, we know about LA and all the things we're talking about that the Lakers may do, but what about the NBA? What do you guys think that the NBA should do to memorialize Kobe going forward? We've heard a little bit now about the All-Star game. Gianna's number on one team, Kobe's number on the other. Everyone's going to have a jersey patch. But what about long-term in the NBA?
I know what I want him to do.
What's that?
I want Jerry to pass over the logo.
And Jerry wants to.
Because to me it makes sense because it's Jerry. Yeah. And Jerry brought him to Los Angeles and mentored him and was like a father figure to him. And so for this to happen to one of our greatest in this moment and Jerry being that person in his life, I just think it makes so much sense.
It's interesting. This is not the first time people have said, hey, redo the logo, right? And Jerry has said in the past, he's like, I don't need it.
Jerry was already off of it.
Yeah. I think like he said, it would only be fitting, you know, someone who took a chance on him, someone who traded for him and mentored him and has been along for this whole entire ride. And if he's ready to hand the reins over, I don't see why it would be a problem, but you know how it goes.
What have you heard, Ramona, in the NBA discussions? Because this is kind of unprecedented of how to deal with this, a player of this magnitude, dealing with, you know, the loss of him in the middle of his prime. And then also, of course, the NBA is still dealing with the death of David Stern in the last month, too, and the black bands on the jerseys for that.
Well, here's the thing. Nobody knows what to do, right? Every player is like, should I change my number to be one of Kobe's numbers or change it from one of Kobe's numbers? Like, nobody knows what to do or feel yet.
Right.
And I think one of the things that I keep hearing from everyone who's close to this and who's trying to plan out what's going to happen tonight here at the game, what's also really important here is to remember the seven other victims of this helicopter crash. And I think it's really important that the Lakers, we saw that last night at the Clipper game, not just listing their names, but also telling their stories. And I think you're going to see some of that tonight. It's been described to me as pregame, it's going to be more mournful and poignant. Throughout the game, there'll be more celebratory tributes. And, you know, I think a player or two might address the crowd. I think there might be some performances. But this is going to be all season long.
Yeah.
And in a week and a half, we're going to have the All-Star game, and we're going to have another round of that. And then there'll be a public memorial. And then we'll have the finals and the playoffs. And we will continue to talk about this and figure this all out.
I think it is going to be a work in progress, right? And we'll talk more about the Lakers tribute in the next segment. Ramona, you're going to stick around for that. We're going to show you a little bit of detail in the next segment because Kobe, the basketball savant, certainly a big part of our lives. Man, he knew everything about the game and wanted to tell you about it. First, though, we've been giving you Mamba moments through this whole show. 2 hours of Mamba moments. And here's the latest. His 2006 game winner versus the Suns. In his own words.
6:01 remaining in the overtime, and the Suns leading 98-97.
So this shot is no different. Just because it might win the game or win a game 7 or whatever it is, it has no bearing on the pressure that I'm facing. So you get to a spot, you elevate, and you knock it down.
Kobe inside the three-point arc, fades and fires and hits at the buzzer. Kobe Bryant has hit a shot at the buzzer. Oh, my goodness.
On this episode of Detail, we're taking a look at Joel Embiid. Now, on this spin here, it's hard to make this move when the hand is there because it's hard to roll off of him. I used to love making this spin baseline. What I would do is I'd wait until I get that forearm. So what I would like to do is I'd try to, what I would call break the hand. So you bump into them hard enough where they feel like just putting the hand on the small of your back is not enough to keep you from the paint. And therefore, they got to go to the forearm. And now when they go to the forearm, now you can just roll right off of them. Because you'd use the left elbow to kind of hook that defensive player as you pirouette around them. Just like that. But with the hand, Myers can keep his space and slide and recover.
Welcome back to The Jump. We are here at LA Live. We are at Staples Center waiting for tonight's game when the Lakers will take the court for the first time. I've got Paul Pierce, David Fizdale, Ramona Shelburne with me right now. Paul, I see you watching that thing. Like, I know that's his move.
He had that in his bag.
He's absolutely right about that, too.
Get that forearm on him.
And it's crazy hearing his voice like that. And we're going to hear it again tonight over and over in the last segment. Ramona was detailing for us some of the plans that the Lakers have and how hard this is for so many people to put this on tonight. And I think that's what fans out there have to understand about why the Lakers asked for Tuesday's game to be postponed. That they knew tonight they had to put on the kind of show worthy of Kobe Bryant. And the people being asked to do this were some of the people closest to him. We've talked a lot about the relationship team owner Jeannie Buss had with Kobe Bryant, almost like a son to her. And then, of course, Rob Pelinka, the general manager of the Los Angeles Lakers. He was Kobe's agent for 20 years. You can look at the two of them together. Here's a little bit, just a little bit of the statement Rob Pelinka put out. He said, on Sunday, I lost my best friend and my sweet goddaughter. He was Gigi's godfather. He said, with that, there has been an amputation of part of my soul. He talked about Kobe being a force of nature. He talked about Gigi being pure joy. And then he put out a Maya Angelou quote. He said, when great trees fail, lions hunker down in tall grasses. He said, what I am learning daily is after the tragic loss of these nine souls, he said, life on this side of eternity will never be the same. There is an irreplaceable void, he said, but I'm also finding there is hope, and each new step is going to be full of deep sorrow, deep prayers, and moving forward. For people like Rob Pelinka, for Jeannie Buss, for the Lakers who have to do the tonight, and by the way, play a game. Afterward.
Play a game.
What do you think this is going to be like?
So I saw Rob at practice yesterday, and he was trying to do his job, right? Mm-hmm. He was trying to be the head of the Lakers organization. He has a trade deadline next week.
Right.
I mean, I don't even know how to call him right now as a human, let alone as a general manager in this league, and ask about his roster. Mm-hmm. How do you do that? Rob has been one of the closest people to the Bryant family since this. I remember there was a great story in Sports Illustrated a couple years ago written by our friend Lee Jenkins. Mm-hmm. And he said, he quoted Rob Pelinka saying, when Kobe would come up with new material for some of his shows, either from Granity Studios, for the podcast, for Detail, he would often show it to Rob Pelinka's kids. And if they thought it was good,
they gave him the stamp.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's how close Rob is to the Bryant family. Like, their kids are friends. And he's been having to help the Bryant family through this.
Help Vanessa, help the kids, also run a basketball team, also help Jeannie and be there for her.
Yeah.
Also be with the team. And as you say, team duties. Look, the rest of the NBA, as much as we would like everything to stop right now. And by the way, there have been so many times this week, I have wanted to scream at my TV, just stop. Stop playing basketball.
Yeah.
Stop doing everything. Don't you know what's happened here?
Right.
That's not how it works. And so all these guys have to go on. Paul, if you're in LeBron James' situation, you have been the leader captain of a team. As Ramona said, there's expectation of him to speak tonight. We don't know if he's going to address the crowd, if he feels ready to do that yet, but certainly a lot of fans will want to hear from him tonight.
Well, a lot lays on LeBron's shoulders. And like you said, he has broad shoulders. But what we have to understand about LeBron, he's not only the face of the Lakers, and he's the face of the league. He's the face of pretty much the sports world. So if I were him, I would feel like it would be my responsibility to just come out and say some heartfelt words about Kobe Bryant at half court. You know, it doesn't have to be long. Just, you know, people want to hear what LeBron James has to say. I know he's posted some things on Instagram, but just to actually hear his voice around the world on the national spotlight, I think people want to hear that.
Yeah. I got to hang out with him the other night at his kids' game, and talking about a special moment, you know, because I know, you know, how much that resonated with him with Gigi being lost as well. And so to see him with Lil Bronny, you know, that night, and, you know, Dwayne Wade's mom was there, and seeing young Wade there, you know, just it puts it all into context, and it reminds you that these players are people.
Yep.
And they're just dads and husbands, and they're going through this deal just trying to figure it out like the rest of the world. And so just to be there and to be a part of that was really a moving moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, the fact that LeBron, as you say, he's the face of the league. He's been the face of the league for a long time. But that it is now when he can relate to Kobe with that stage of having kids and being a dad.
Absolutely.
But I would completely understand if, you know, he couldn't do it.
Yes.
You know, because it's
heavy.
The expectations.
It's heavy. I mean, it's
so
a touchy situation.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. We've been doing these Mamba moments throughout the show, and I love, Fizz, that you're on our set for this one, because this is Heat Lakers.
Oh, I remember this.
This is 2009. Take a look.
Oh, man. I remember this one vividly. We got three guys there.
Ridiculous. Look at what, that's ridiculous. I mean, come on.
So he's alive, but D-Wade just looked at me like,
there's nothing you could do.
What do you do?
Running off the wrong foot, three guys on him.
And look at that face, by the way, that Kobe makes after at the end.
D-Wade on the contest is right in his face.
He's exactly where he's supposed to be.
I mean, stop.
Don't get no better.
It was like, afterwards, it was just like, well, at least it was Kobe.
Yeah.
Right. Our national anthem this evening by Lee.
Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols with Paul Pierce. And as you just saw there, three-time Grammy winner and Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Flea, who played the national anthem at Kobe's last game.
That was awesome.
It was incredible.
Thank you,
we will discuss your national anthem in a moment because I don't want to get past that. But I do wanted to get to just the post you put up. You had a photo of you and Kobe together, and you said you were humbled by his presence. How will you personally remember Kobe Bryant?
I remember Kobe Bryant as a person evolving, a person always evolving, and as such a iconic fixture of the LA landscape He was someone we all loved. He came when he was 17 years old to the Lakers. I met him when he was 17 years old. And we watched him come in as this arrogant kid, you know, wildly shooting threes in his first game, coming in, you know, and then when he started starting, he didn't want to pass the ball. He conflicted with Shaq. He was wild, but he was always a leader, and he was always bodacious, and he was always bold. And then as his career went on, and he became humbler, and he became kinder, and he started learning how to lift up his teammates, and he started, you know, reaching out and becoming warmer, and like in all these ways, like watching him evolve. Mm-hmm. And then he retires, and we watch him evolve even more. He's a storyteller. He's putting out kids' books. He's coaching, you know, his girls' basketball team. And to see him go like this is just devastating. You know, his beautiful little girl, and it's like you know, you mentioned earlier in the break there, it's just hard to reckon with. That here's this guy going full force ahead, this life force, this amazing person, and then just bam, he's gone. You know, and for me, it's a time of mourning. It's been a time of a lot of prayer, and it really tests faith to, like, come to terms to understand why something like this happens. But one of the reasons I love sports and love basketball in particular, and I love basketball. I was at a high school game night before. I love it. It brings us all together.
Yeah.
Every economic class, every race, every flavor of human being, we come together because we love this beautiful thing. And it's a craft. And basketball is an art. And just like that brings us together and brings us all under this umbrella of this incredible art form that we watch people innovate and take further and further and deeper, so does Kobe's death bring us together. And we all come together, and we can all cry, and we can all realize that something momentous has happened, and that we will never be the same. And in this city, it will never be the same. And so in his life, as in his death, he brings us together, and it's togetherness. And for that, I express gratitude.
So well said. It's notable to me, too, that people like you were so drawn to him. Paul, we know that Los Angeles, Showtime, certainly in the Magic era, drew in the celebrities, but there were years after that where it was not the center of pop culture for musicians, for actors, the way it was back in the 80s. And then Kobe comes in, and you have the Kobe Shaq era, and you knew that guys like the Chili Peppers or anybody else would be there to see you play because they wanted to be there for the Kobe show.
Oh, absolutely. You definitely brought the star. This is a continuation of, you know, what Magic did, and just it took it to a new level, you know, because L.A. is always about the stars, and when you have a star that doesn't shine any brighter than Kobe Bryant, they gravitate toward that, and they come to the games, and they express love. They want to go in the locker room, take a picture with him. Can you say hi to my son or daughter? I mean, people gravitated toward Kobe on all levels.
So when they asked you to do the anthem at his last ever game, what was your reaction?
I was, you know, honored to be asked. For me, it's all about the craftsmanship, like the thing that I loved about Kobe Bryant. I mean, it's a very deep and deep thing, but the craftsmanship, the dedication. Kobe, like the reason that people connected with Kobe so much, it's not just loving a great player. It's an ethos. It's a way of life. It's a guy that got up at 4 o'clock in the morning and worked out every day and focused. And every time, I watched every game he ever played. Yeah. I watched every game Magic ever played. Mm-hmm. Since I moved to LA in 72, I've watched every Laker game I could. And to see him do what he did, it wasn't just the heroic moments, the like, you know, beating you guys in 2010, losing sadly in 2008, but like all those things where I was like, my heart was being wrenched out of my chest and I was thrilled and amazed. But it was every game. It was the regular season game against a terrible team when he bought it. Mm-hmm. And he bought it every night consistently because he loved it. Because the reason that he had the discipline and the worth ethic was his heart. This is love. It's not like some macho jock thing. And I know, you know, it's love, and it's wanting to honor the game itself and wanting to lift up people. And ultimately, that's what dedication to a craft does. And as a musician, mm-hmm. I dedicate my life to being as good as I can be. Every time I step on a stage, I will sweat blood. I don't care if I'm in Peoria in the middle of the winter and I got the flu and I just played 10 concerts in a row. I'm going to go till I drop. Yeah, and do what Kobe did. And that's what he always did, and I respect it. I love it. I'm humbled by it, and I was humbled by him, as I put in that post.
You said you've lived here for almost 50 years. Your band's certainly the Southern California ethos in so many ways. Paul, you grew up here. Mm-hmm. Can you guys even explain to people around the country what Kobe has meant to L.A. and the way the city has been mourning?
I mean, we call this the city of Angel, and Kobe was definitely an angel. As I looked up the Magic, I see these young kids in the gym looked up to Kobe. Everywhere I go, being a native of L.A., growing up here, you see his jersey. You see his shoes everywhere. You see the kids, even at my camps, wearing, you know, his gear. I mean, he's just an icon, a figure who everybody followed. And they understood his work. And if one thing these kids could follow, whether it be a basketball player, or just a regular student, somebody who's striving for greatness. He taught them to understand what the Mamba mentality was all about. Whether you played sports or not, the Mamba mentality was about working hard until you couldn't work anymore and no excuses about it. No excuses. No matter what kind of obstacles come your way, there's no excuses. That's what the Mamba mentality is all about. Sacrifice and finding a way.
And people in L.A. getting to see themselves that way through him. Again, through your music, you represented Southern California so well. Why do you think that L.A. in particular is just, I mean, people are reeling here in a way that's hard to almost even explain on television?
As human beings, we yearn to evolve. We always want to become better men, better women, have a deeper understanding, be more present, be more clear, be more focused at the task at hand, make wiser decisions. And like I said before, one of the most exciting things about Kobe was his constant evolution. Through his missteps, through everything, we saw a guy that was willing to face up to everything and embrace it. And he's just like, you know, Paul, you played on the same team almost your whole career. I guess at the very end you went to the Nets. But he was here his whole career. What player plays 20 years on one team anymore? And we had him from when he was a kid, and he was here the whole time. And he thrilled us, and he lifted us up. And it was beautiful. It was beautiful to see the precision, the work. And then as he got older, the kindness, the sweetness, you know, and all that stuff. And it's just, you know, beautiful. We in L.A., like, We love basketball in L.A. We've got the Lakers, you know. And, like, since I was a little boy, I mean, look, since I was I act like a two-year-old when it comes. Like, I have heckled you many a time, Paul. I must confess, I apologize. My wife made me stop heckling. But you know, when it comes to, like, sports, I'm, like, crazy. Like, I'm a crazy Laker fan, like a little kid, you know. But something like this, we step back and get a big picture. And why was he so important to us in Los Angeles? It was because he was here for us the entire time.
Yes, he was. But the other thing, Rachel, he was drafted here.
Yes.
I mean, he was traded here from day one, rookie year. So there's going to be other players that's going to come along, a la LeBron James. He got traded here, but he'll never get the love. Even if Kobe was here today, because they feel like he's one of their own. Like you said, you've seen him grow from a teenager, immature teenager, to an adult, a mature adult. And the fans, they feel like he's a member of the family. Like, it's different when you come out of free agency or you come through trade. It's just a different feeling of accepting that player as a fan of a franchise.
He is family, and I'm going to use the present tense. Absolutely. Flea, thank you so much for being with
us,
sharing this.
Me.
It was amazing to see that great anthem performance. Yeah. Again, that's going to stick with me for the rest of the day. We've been doing Mamba Moments throughout this entire show, and this one of the most memorable, 2013. You guys know what I'm talking about. Pop that Achilles, and yet stayed in for those three throws and getting up on his own power to walk off the court. Take a look.
Eight from their reserve. Lyon again going to work. Falls down. Again, he's struggling. He's going to stay down there for a bit.
Trying to massage that left ankle a little bit. Some discomfort trying to get to the sideline to get another look at the play. It seemed like as he was trying to explode by, it just almost gave out. Yeah. He immediately grabbed for that left Achilles area. As you can see, stepped right back there and just stretched it.
And Bryant has not sat tonight. He is literally on his last leg right now. He's going to shoot the free throws. And he could barely make it to the free throw line.
Got it. Not backpedaling or whatever he has to do to get to the other end. If, in fact, he gets to the other end before a foul, maybe.
Made him. Lakers might foul. They might foul to get him out of the game. That's
they have to.
Do. Yeah. Kobe's coming out.
Yeah, I mean, that's the Achilles. I shouldn't say that. That's foot injury. Yeah.
So Kobe Bryant cannot continue.
Hi, I'm Kevin Agania, head on a special edition of SportsCenter at 5 Eastern. Our continuing coverage live from L.A. on the night the Lakers return to the Staples Center to honor and celebrate the life of Kobe Bryant. Plus, we're live from Miami with Super Bowl 54 around the corner. Our expert predictions between the Chiefs and 49ers. And PTI standing by to discuss the NBA All-Star snubs in their top takes of the day. SportsCenter with Sage Steele, Maria Taylor, and me next after this special edition of The Jump.
To sit here and say that I grasp what happened tonight, you know, I'd be lying.
Kobe tiptoes the sideline, throws it through with both hands.
For three again, yes!
Well, the whole night just kind of felt like a blur.
You talked about him being in one of those zones. Yeah. He's definitely in it right now.
It's about the W. That's why I turned it on. It just turned into something special.
When I was at the free throw line, you know, 79 points, the whole crowd started standing up and yeah, I just remember thinking, man, I better not miss these free throws.
And an 81-point game.
I couldn't even dream of this when I was a kid. You know, there's just no way possible.
We are back here at Staples Center. You can see Kobe, his daughter Gianna, overlooking all of us back here. The plaza has been full of people, and this is a look inside Staples Center. This will, of course, be the Lakers' first game since Sunday's tragedy. All those shirts with the Bryant name on the back, and the Lakers will also be honoring the rest of the victims of the helicopter crash. You know, guys, we have this plaza behind us full of people. We've been showing it over and over again this week. Our Russell Baxter reporting that they are going to ground up all of the flowers here, and that they will, I'm sorry, Baxter Holmes reporting that they are going to ground up all the flowers here and make it into mulch that they're going to spread around the LA Live area to grow trees and flowers here.
Wow.
They're going to box up all of the memorabilia that fans have left and give that on to Kobe's family. So
beautiful.
Everything here going on, so meaningful. But as you saw at the top of this segment, we cannot do a Kobe Bryant show without talking about Kobe Bryant's 81-point game. And I had to get two players back on
Where's
here
Jaylen
with me.
Rose at?
Hey, we're going to give him a pass today,
Where
man.
Where is Jaylen at?
It was his birthday yesterday. You don't want to talk about Kobe dropping 81 on him. Come on, B.
I'm just saying.
Jaylen's going to give you a pass today, man. I know you don't want to.
We'll catch you on countdown. I'll catch you on countdown, though.
Can you guys explain from a player's perspective, when you hear that Kobe Bryant dropped 81 in an NBA game, in this era, by the way, not the crazy Wilt Pace era, but in the era that he did it in, what does this mean to guys who played the game?
I mean, it's unthinkable. Let me tell you, I was sitting in my basement in Boston playing dominoes with a couple of my friends. The Laker game was on, and I kid you not, you know, he had 50, and I was like, oh, that's Kobe going off. When he got the 50, it was like, oh, that's just one of those days, 60. And then he got the 70. You're in the middle bones, the TV is playing, you kind of watching.
Yeah.
And then it's like, he's at 70, and I turn around, we stop playing dominoes. Yeah. We're like, hold on, what is going on here? He got what? And then we saw him score those last 10 points, and we was like, when do we just watch right here? You know, because we're in the middle of a domino. It was just like, wait a minute, did we just hear this right? Those are numbers as a kid that you score on the video game.
Right.
Like when you just use one player to score all the points, and this actually happened. This is something while I played the game of basketball, I thought I would never see in an NBA game with my own eyes.
And it's not like we've seen it since.
No.
Well, I was in Boston. Just so happened I wasn't in the basement with P at Club Shiznick that night. But I was at the house in my one-bedroom apartment. I just left the gym from my night workout because, you know, I was still trying to earn minutes at the time. And I get back and they like, somebody sent me a text was like, man, Kobe's going off. I'm like, let me hurry up and get to the crib. So I hurry up and get home. First of all, I'm a guy that I was excited when I scored 10 points.
Right.
So when I got home and I was able to see and I was sitting there watching, I'm like, man, it's unreal. And
it wasn't
just all three ball, all tray balls. It was from every aspect of the court. It was layup game, fadeaway game, you know, whatever it was, he was out there serving them boys. And that's why I think Jalen, I know you don't want to be here, man. You my big bro.
Jalen will be on ESPN later today, yeah, so we'll get him.
I'll see him later on tonight. But, man, you know, Rachel, you look at this and it was like, it's unreal. I mean, it was probably the best performance I've seen regular season wise since I've been in the NBA.
Again, there hasn't been anything like it. I do want to speak in your guys' defense.
42 minutes in the game.
Right.
I mean, 48 minutes in the game. So per minute, what is that?
And he didn't play all 48 in that one, although there are games he played all 48 in. I just want to speak in your guys' defense. The most Kobe ever dropped on the two of you, 43 points. So it wasn't that bad.
I mean, but it was more than a few times.
Not there. It was twice. I want to take this minute to talk about the impact Kobe's death had on you, because you just, within the last month, had a very public feud back and forth on Twitter with one of your ex-teammates, Kevin Durant, someone that you were close with as recently as this last NBA Finals. I know you guys were out together, but that there was a back and forth, and things got pretty ugly at the time. And how did that come back to you when you heard about Kobe's passing?
Well, you know, KD is not just a teammate of mine. He's a brother of mine. And sometimes, you know, brothers, you fight. A lot of times, you can't take back what you said, but you could just ask for forgiveness. And, you know, at that point in time, you know, nobody in their right mind would ever thought that Kobe Bryant would have passed away at the age of 41. Makes you look at life totally different. Not the great Kobe. You know, you think of him, he would have found a way to get out the helicopter or find a way to fix
it. Right.
Yeah. So, like, and so, you know, I said it yesterday, you know, Paul raised me, and, you know, God forbid, if anything was to happen to Paul or KG, I would be devastated. I mean, I wouldn't be able to live with myself. So, you know, I just wanted to cleanse my soul and reach out to KD and just tell him, hey, man, you know, I love you. I apologize from the bottom of my heart. And, you know, I just wanted to let him know how I feel in case we won't see tomorrow, in case I don't make it tomorrow or he don't. You know, I think everyone should do that, you know, far as if you beefing with loved ones or a friend, it's okay. Just, you know, squash the beef because it's not worth it.
I like what you said, too, the idea that you reached out to him privately, but you did it publicly as well because you made, in your words, you made the mistake in public.
Absolutely.
That you said those things in public, so you wanted to take them back in public.
And I also think, like, if you look at Shaq's comments, the way he, you know, addressed Kobe the other night, and he was like, man, I haven't spoke with Kobe since 2016. And when you think about that, he was like, man, I'm just hurt because I should have reached out more. We should have talked more. And that was 4 years ago.
Right.
And so you don't want those regrets and having to go to sleep at night with that on your soul or your mind and something happened to your brother. Not me.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I know, Paul, you've said it inspired you in similar ways. I think all of us, just the tragedy of this and realizing that nothing is promised. We've been doing these Mamba moments at the end of each segment. We're going to give you another one now before we take a very quick break. This is Kobe's last game, and this is how he ended it.
Oof.
Thank you from the bottom of my heart. God, I love you guys. And, I love you guys. And to my family, my wife Vanessa, our daughters Natalia and Gianna, you know, thank you guys for all your sacrifice. You know, for all the hours I spent in the gym working and training. And Vanessa, you holding down the family the way that you have. I can't, there's no way that I could thank you enough for that. So, yeah, from the bottom of my heart, thank you. And what can I say? Mamba out.
Welcome back to The Jump. We are counting you down until the Lakers play their first game here at Staples Center since the tragedy on Sunday. You are looking overhead at the plaza. We are at Staples out here on the balcony. I am joined again by Matt Barnes, Kendrick Perkins, Coach David Fizdale. And guys, the Lakers have to play a basketball game tonight. And by the way, the Portland Trailblazers do also. I saw Dame Lillard downstairs earlier just being dropped kind of in the middle of this. And Carmelo Anthony, who was close to Kobe Bryant, he's just not going to play tonight. And he's played a couple games since Kobe passed, but just being here tonight in this building, I think the emotion of maybe having to play against LeBron and sort of against that Laker uniform, it just, he is taking the night for personal reasons, and we can all understand that.
Absolutely.
As a player, how would you approach being in this ceremony and getting through this game tonight?
I think it hits everybody a little bit different. You know what I mean? I think some guys are looking forward to the escape of actually playing. You know what I mean? That's our 2.5 hour where we just try to clear everything out of our head as much as possible and focus on the task at hand. You know, I play the day after my mom died because that's where I found a little bit of solemn, a little bit of a brief relief. You know what I mean? I think in the midst of a game, you don't feel it, but as soon as the timeout hit, the end of the quarter hits, you're sitting on the bench, you kind of resort back to what's hurting, and it's going to be a tough night.
Well, I agree with Matt. I think, you know, yesterday I was saying that you never know for us with your emotions, but as a basketball player, and if you're a jail type locker room, you got a real brotherhood, and we call it our sanctuary, because there's a lot of guys in there that can relate to one another outside, you know, and so you pull together as brothers and as teammates. And what, like you said, once you get between those lines and the game start, you know, that's like a sanctuary for us.
So that's for the guys playing. But, Coach, if you had to be Frank Vogel tonight, how do you do? You've got to prep a game plan, first of all, get them to pay attention to going over film before the game, and then in the game. How do you do that?
I think you stay brief with the prep stuff, and you lean on your assistant coaches to keep corralling guys and keeping them tight together. And you really just talk about, you know, obviously the start of the game will be extremely emotional, but at some point it will settle in and become a basketball game, because a lot of guys, like you said, it is their sanctuary, and those guys that they're out there with are really the only people that understand emotionally what each guy is going through. So you want to lean on each other as much as possible, and as a coach, I try to preach that.
And by the way, the fans, obviously, it's a big ticket to be in here tonight. A lot of fans feel like this is how they can be connected to Kobe. Yeah. I just checked the secondary market scene here. The cheapest ticket tonight right now going for $700. Tickets going for $3,000 a pop. I will say I checked StubHub, and on their site they say that all the transaction fees are going to go to the Mamba on 3 campaign. The NBA and the Players Association also announcing donating $100,000 to the Mamba on 3 campaign, which is going to go toward, again, Vanessa Bryant came out and said, the other families. Yes. And I think that's an important part of tonight, too.
Yeah.
You know, the families who are on that helicopter were there. They weren't just random families, right? They were part of the Bryant's world, and they were just as important to this family and this team as anyone else. And you're going to hear about them tonight, too. Yeah. I think that's a big deal.
Actually, I absolutely think that's very important, you know, considering, you know, two of Gigi's teammates were on the plane with her. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So people she saw often playing all the time. And obviously, Kobe and Gigi take the center stage because they're known around the world. But like you said, you know, the other losses are no less. It's going to be hard for everyone, but I definitely think it's important for them to be honored. And like you said, there's stories told as well, not just pictures.
Absolutely.
There's so much pressure on the Lakers from here on out as well because, look, the trade deadline is in a week, which is crazy to think about. We would be talking about this all week on The Jump, but we have barely mentioned it. They have to be a basketball team, really, starting after this. The Lakers were expected to maybe compete for the NBA title. What do you do for the rest of the season, knowing that that could crush you if you don't play it right?
You go about your day like Kobe would. You put in that time. You don't cheat each other. You come to work every day and you do extra, and you put it all on the line because that's how Kobe would have done it. And you be able to walk away from the season knowing that you did everything you could to honor his legacy.
I mean, look, I've said a bunch. I hope that no one out there feels they have to, quote, win it for Kobe, because there's so much out there that you can't control as a player. You can't know for sure you're going to be able to win it for Kobe. All you could do is try to win it for Kobe.
All you could do is be great. And in my opinion, I'm going about life, and I think everybody should, in honoring Kobe, is that when adversity hits or when times get tough, you should live by the motto of what would Kobe do. I think that'll help you get through things. You know, you should want to be great. I know I want to be great as a TV analyst. He making me put my all into it. And, you know, I know Coach Fields want to be great at what he's doing. I know right. You want to be great now. And Matt also, like, that's that inspiration that you get from Kobe. And, you know, before I finish talking, I just want to tell y'all again that I appreciate being able to be up here with all you.
Same
with
here,
you,
brother.
Rachel, with you, Coach Fields, and you, my brother, Matt, because you just never know.
Because you right. were with LeBron earlier this week yeah. at his son's basketball game. If anyone is equipped
right.
to handle who has been dealing with unrelenting pressure, is he ready for this tonight?
Absolutely. And like you said, he has been built for this. Mm. He has gone through so much adversity throughout his career, the criticisms, the ups, the downs. This guy he's supposed to be here in this moment with everything that's going on.
Absolutely. I think that's the best way to put it. This is going to be a very special moment tonight for so many people. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing these 2 hours with us. We have so much more on ESPN to come the rest of the night for Kobe.
Kendrick, take one.
What can I say? I mean, really. What can we say? Day by day, season by season, 20 to be exact. Growing up watching them paint murals, using this building as his first studio, using LA as his canvas, restoring crowns back to where they belong.